Hello, all of you out there in Radioland. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to barista, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. My guest today is someone who, oddly enough, turned her love of parties into a viable business. My guest today is none other than the tipsy gypsy herself, Heidi Haney. But we will get to the tipsy gypsy part in a bit. As usual, we want to get to know her first. You may have seen her behind the bar at a friend's wedding or retirement party, or perhaps it was at a Maritime Center event. So welcome to the show, Heidi.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So let's start at the very beginning. Are you a local girl, born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
Not on the Olympic Peninsula, but born and bred in the state of Washington. So okay. I was born in Ellensburg.
Okay, and what did your folks do?
My mom was a clerical worker for most of her life, and then the latter part of her life turned her career into being went to massage school and became a massage therapist, and then owned her own business doing massage therapy, and that's what she retired doing.
Okay.
And my dad, he was in the Air Force Reserves, or was he in the Army Reserves? He was in the Reserves.
Right.
And he worked for Weyerhaeuser his whole life, so he retired from Weyerhaeuser.
Okay. Yeah. And are you an only child, or do you have siblings?
I have siblings. I have two sisters and a brother.
Okay. Where do you fall in the crowd?
I'm the oldest.
Ah, so am I. What were you like as a teenager? What do you think your peers thought of you?
I was kind of known as the smart, brainy girl. I had the braces and the glasses. I was super tall and super skinny and kind of gawky and gangly and kind of nerdy.
Okay. How tall are you? You're very tall.
Next yeah, 6'1".
6'1". Mm-hmm. There are rare kids that know from the beginning they want to be XYZ when they so-called grow up. Were you one of those?
I thought I was. I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay.
And a marine biologist and okay. a veterinarian.
Okay.
Couldn't decide between the three.
That's a lot of territory there.
It's a lot of territory.
So what did you do?
I ended up going to school for a little bit for a certified medical assistant. The plan was that I was going to work nights drawing people's blood as a phlebotomist and then put myself through medical school to become a doctor during the day. But plans got a little fouled up. I got married way too young at the age of 19.
That's pretty young.
Yeah, and then divorced pretty young because of the mistake of marrying too young. And so then, you know, you're supporting yourself and then college becomes very hard to do, especially when you're going for the almighty medical degree, you know, having
a
job
and
doing
this.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to do. So I fell into hospitality, bartending and waiting tables.
Wait a second. I think you were a model first.
I did start modeling. I started modeling when I was about 12. I went to modeling school. My parents put me through modeling school, and I started modeling at a very young age. So I did a lot of that.
Most models are quite tall, I understand.
Yeah. But I call it the starving actor syndrome, starving model. I still had to work it didn't pay the bills, but I had a lot of fun and I got a lot of experiences doing it. And I did it for quite a few years.
Huh. Well, from reading schlocky magazines and all, I know that there are supermodels. Now, did you aspire to be a supermodel?
Oh, very much so. I don't know. And most models who don't aspire to be the supermodel. But yeah, I used to have the posters of all the supermodels from the 80s and 90s in my bedroom, you know, the Linda Evangelistas and the Christy Turlingtons.
Well, it just, you know, sort of slight detour. But what does it take to be a supermodel? Because I see pictures of lots of girls that are just as pretty as the ones that become the supermodel. What's the real nut of it?
I think the it factor is having the trifecta, being able to be really good on the runway, being super photogenic, and then having the good speaking voice, being able to do commercials and things of that nature. So you have to kind of have all three.
And I guess most girls don't.
That's true. I wasn't good in the photogenic department. I was really good on the runway. I never really got a lot of speaking opportunities, but yeah, so I was a runway model.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did that phase of your life end? What happened? Why did you stop being a model?
Various things, growing up, working, and then just getting on later in my 20s and, you know, not quote-unquote making it.
I guess you have to be 15 or something like that.
Needing to make more money to pay your bills and can't always just work for fun anymore.
So what did you do?
that's when it kind of fell, you know, I was already doing the hospitality work. So I went into restaurant management.
Well, but for a while you lived in Mexico.
I did. So my little Mexico journey, that was in my early 20s. And some girlfriends and I just jaunted off to Mexico to do we got some modeling work down there. Back in the early 90s, it was extremely inexpensive to stay in Mexico. Yeah. So, you know, I had enough money in my savings account to last me a couple years to be down there. And
nice.
We just did what young 20-year-olds do. We partied our butts off in Mexico City.
Yeah, I think that's what most young 20-year-olds do, things like that.
Yeah, we adventured. And, you know, we worked a little bit while we were down there and doing various modeling.
Sounds like fun.
Photo shoots and stuff. So it was pretty fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I guess so.
It was a lot of fun.
And so how did you get to the next chapter?
That was a little detour to Texas.
Texas?
One of my roommates lived in Dallas, and she said, have you ever been to Dallas, Texas? And I said, absolutely not. Let's go. So it was supposed to be a two-week vacation to Dallas and then back to Mexico City.
Right.
But then I met a cowboy.
Ah.
And we ended up getting married. And so I had my stuff. I never did go back to Mexico. I had my stuff shipped up to Texas.
Boy, that was fast.
Yeah, that landed me about almost 20 years in Texas. Yep.
And
before I came back home.
So this must be where you got into the hospitality business.
Yeah, this is pretty much where I got into the hospitality business.
And, you know, saying hospitality business is one of those broad, sweeping terms. What in your case, what did it mean?
The majority of my time was spent with Olive Garden, a corporate casual chain.
Right.
And so I started just waitressing there, and within 6 months, they promoted me to manager. So then I spent the next 16 years being a restaurant manager. I was aspired to be a divisional training manager for the corporation, which meant that I trained other managers. So one of the positions I had the longest was a culinary manager, and I trained other culinary managers on new restaurant openings. Whenever we opened a brand new restaurant, I would be the training manager.
So what is a culinary manager?
You're in charge of all the kitchen staff and the kitchen and labor in the kitchen. The inventory, the ordering, all that stuff.
But you wouldn't necessarily decide menus or things like that.
No, the corporation did that. They had a whole team of people up in the corporate office who decided the menus and the recipes. You're basically just managing the whole outcome of everything.
So here's a question for you as a customer.
Mm-hmm.
Is the menu the same at every Olive Garden?
Every single one of them is exactly the same.
Huh. Interesting.
So it's consistency across the board. You can go to Olive Garden in New York, you're going to get the same thing as you do Olive Garden in Vancouver, Washington.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You would think there'd be a little...
Unless they've changed that since I left. I left in 2006, so...
Okay, well, yeah, we'll allow that you aren't necessarily totally up to speed on it. But I would have thought that they would allow for regional specialties, like that in, you know, the Southwest, there'd be more Tex-Mex kind of things, and in the East, I don't know, Manhattan clam chowder, things like that. But I guess that doesn't happen.
Not with that corporation, they didn't. And maybe some of their other restaurant chains. You know, it was owned by a big corporation, Darden Restaurants, and they owned 5 restaurant chains. So Red Lobster, Olive Garden, Bahama Breeze, those are some of the restaurants that the same corporation owned.
I had no idea. I thought they were competitors.
Nope.
Yeah, well, learn something
all
new
under the
every
same umbrella.
Day. All right. So you said you were there for, did you say 16 years?
Yeah, I did restaurant management for 16 years. I did Logan's Roadhouse was another restaurant that I did. It was basically a steakhouse. So steakhouses with the peanut shells on the floor and that kind of thing.
Yes.
They had a big window where you can watch the cooks flame broil the steaks on the grill and things like that. And
I've been in restaurants like that.
Yeah, so I was at a restaurant like that for about 6 years. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That can be fun watching them do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there you are, 16 years, roughly speaking, in Dallas. And that's a long time. And you must have been pretty settled by then.
Yeah.
Why did you
leave? It wasn't just in Dallas. I lived all over Texas because Olive Garden moved me around a lot. So I lived probably in about, I'm going to guess off the top of my head, 7 or 8 cities in the state of Texas, and then in Oklahoma and Wichita, Kansas as well.
Wow.
So they kind of moved me around a lot.
I hope they paid all your moving expenses.
Yes. And, you know, people come in, pack up your stuff, move your stuff. All you got to do is unpack when you get to where you're going.
They didn't unpack for you?
No.
Well,
they didn't.
I don't know about that.
That's okay. I'd rather have do the unpacking than the packing.
Yeah. Okay. So why did you decide to leave the great state of Texas?
Because I'm from the great state of Washington, and my mom is here, my sister's here, and, you know, I had a relationship that ended, and my mom basically called and said, before you meet anyone else, time for you to come home.
you wanted to get in there before.
You know, I have a niece growing up. I had a nephew growing up. And I just, it was time to come home. Okay. It was time to come home. I did not want to be in Texas forever. I definitely wanted to come home.
Okay. Now, when relocating to this part of the world, this is common. Jobs are not that easy to come by, particularly in the Port Townsend area, but in general, mm-hmm. jobs are tough. Did you have something lined up before you got here?
I did. I got very blessed. I think most people who live here have a serendipity story. When I ended my restaurant management career, I went into a whole different direction of managing independent living homes. So mm-hmm. the kind of homes that like half of the site will be independent living apartments. It's for seniors. And then half might be assisted living. Right. I started out in a entity that was all independent living. And it's basically you were a property manager and you lived on site though, because you were there for your residents.
So this was in Texas when
you started? This was in Texas when I started. Yeah. And it was a couple's job. So the person I was with at the time, we got the job together as a couple, lived at the facility as a couple and managed it. And I worked for that company for 5 years. And so when I was coming to come home and I told my mom, I don't want to live in Squim. I really don't want to live in Port Angeles, but I really like that Port Townsend.
Yeah,
because my mom and my sister are both in Squim. Yeah. And I really, really, really wanted to live in Port Townsend. And
okay, so my before you get there, let me ask a question mm-hmm. about your first experience. It was all independent living. Was mm-hmm. it big? Like 300?
Yeah, it was big. It was around 100 units.
Ah.
Yeah, 122, okay. I think, to be
and
exact.
And so as a manager, roughly speaking, what do you do and what did your partner do?
Well, we're the executive directors, so we manage the restaurant staff, the maintenance staff, the housekeeping staff, because in those facilities, you know, the residents get housekeeping, they get 3 meals a day, there's an activity director that schedules a whole bunch of activities, so you're basically over the entire building and you answer to the corporation for all the numbers, you know.
And do you actually screen new residents coming in, things like that?
Yeah, I would be the one who was in charge of the sales. Well, I had a sales team, but I was in charge of the sales team. So we had a sales team that would procure residents for the apartments. Procure.
A little odd term for that, but hire them. No, they didn't hire them.
No, we didn't hire residents.
No. You enticed them. You sold them the wonders of the place you were in.
That's made them feel good about spending $5,000 a month on their apartment.
Well, it did include meals, so that's...
It did include meals. And in all honesty, the apartments were between $1,800 for a studio up to the big, huge, fancy ones that were $5,000 a month. So there was all different kinds of sizes of apartments, because you could have 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom apartments in there, too. So
they must have been pretty big.
Yeah, they were huge. Well, they were really big.
Okay. So you're poised to come back to the Olympic Peninsula.
Yeah. My sister at the time was the executive director over at Life Care Center. And so she
had... That was Kai Tai, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was Kai Tai. She knew somebody in the business that I was in. She was obviously in skilled nursing. That's a whole different level that requires lots of degrees to have. But there was a Seaport Landing here, which is now Avamere, was hiring an executive director. And so through my experience that I had, I got an interview... And they hired me. So I got hired in October of 2015. And my first day on the job was February of 2016. I moved here in January of 2016. So I had a job lined up coming into Port Townsend.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Pretty blessed, huh?
Yeah. That's really good. I mean, it's one of the best stories I've heard. Often people come here and, you know, oops, what am I going to do? How am I going to pay the rent?
Exactly.
Simple things like that. Speaking of rent. Housing is incredibly difficult to get in Port Townsend area. Were you lucky enough to get a good place?
I was super lucky. I rented this cute little studio on top of the Printery owned by Mike here in town, Mike Kenna. And he rented me the apartment. My sister had hooked me up with that connection. And I had an apartment lease coming into town. So.
Wow.
It was a really tiny studio, but it's still my favorite place I've lived in. I loved it. It was really cute. Highly recommended it.
Yeah, well, your sister did a good job.
She did a very good job of getting me home, didn't
right?
she?
Yeah. She did the hard work lifting, you know.
She did do the heavy lifting.
But that's good. So this was in the beginning of 2016.
Yes.
All right. And the facility, which was then called Seaport Landing, how big is it?
I can't remember the exact number of apartments they have. It's over 100 units, though. It's pretty much the same size of what I was managing before. But this one was half assisted living and half independent living. It wasn't all independent living. So you have the side with the resident care coordinator, the director of nursing and things of that nature too. And you have caretakers, you know, on staff and everything.
Okay. So you were there for a couple of years.
I was there just for a year. They sold. So it used to be owned by Bonaventure and then they sold to Avamere. And when they sold, they just got rid of everyone on staff.
Yeah, that happens in these corporate acquisitions.
It does. And it's, so kind of got the wind knocked out of my sails a little bit, going, oh my God, now I'm in Port Townsend without a job. Now what do I do?
Now what do I do? Yeah. I know,
jobs are not easy to come by in Port Townsend.
Exactly. All right. So you sat down for a few minutes and thought about it. And then what happened?
That's when I was blessed enough to have a partner that kind of carried me a little bit through this struggle.
That's good.
Yes, it was very good. We're very, very grateful for him. And then I decided I had always bartended weddings in the summertime for kind of a side hustle. I've always kind of done that. I used to do like 5 or 6 in the summertime just for extra cash. And I was kind of thinking about turning that into a business. But then I thought I want to really just own my own bar. And so I really had my sights set on the cellar door, as we remember years ago when Dominic was selling it. So
Nice place.
I went through the team Jefferson EDC to do their focus plan class to do my business plan.
Good idea.
For purchasing said bar.
Good idea.
And I like to call that class the meat grinder because it went in cellar door and then came out tipsy gypsy. So while I was in that class going through the business plan, I realized I don't necessarily have the capital to do all the things I wanted to do in there.
So I want to ask a little bit about this course you were in. Is it sort of a continuing course that people come in and go out, or is it once a year, or what's the deal?
I think they do it a couple times a year. At least once a year they do it. They might do it more than once a year. I can't remember off the top of my head. But it's a fairly easy, it's a week-long course. I think it was around $250, and they really help you construct your business plan. And it's a group, there was like 12 people in our group, and I think 3 of us ended up opening viable businesses and are still in business and things of that nature. Well, so
the other people in there, were they all, did they all have a firm idea what they wanted to do, or is this sort of...
Some did, some did not.
Okay.
So, and like me, some had a different idea going in than what happened going out.
Exactly. So you started out thinking cellar door, I want to buy it, and then you ran some numbers and it didn't look like you had deep enough pockets.
Correct.
That was a major thing.
Yeah.
Were there other reasons?
That was pretty much the only reason. Yeah. Otherwise... I still love the cellar door, even though it's not open anymore.
Yeah.
Very nostalgic to my heart.
Well, so let's talk about the invention of the Tipsy Gypsy.
Yeah, so I just thought I should put my side hustle to a business. So I ran the numbers on that through the business plan, and that came out pretty good. I was like, because it's low overhead. I don't need a brick and mortar, per se, to run this business. I just need some bar setups and some good shops on some hospitality service to my peeps. And I constructed the business plan and it looked good. And so I went forth.
So where does the name come from?
You know, I was thinking of names and for some reason, I don't remember how I got that name. It just popped in my head. It rhymed. It sounded cute. I always had this kind of Port Townsend-y hippy dippy vibe about me that just one of the things I love about this space, you know, here. And I don't know, just I thought, you know, the tipsy is, you know, the drinks, the tipsy part's pretty self-explanatory, the gypsy part, because I'm a mobile bartender. So it's roaming, rambling, you know, I kind of am bohemian at heart. So I just thought it sounded perfect. And so I went to my attorney that set up my corporation. It's like, oh, please, please, God, don't let the name Tipsy Gypsy be taken in the state of Washington. And we did all the searches, looked all the things, and it was free and available.
Cool.
And my website. So then I thought, oh gosh, now I'm not going to get a website. Surely someone has that. Well, they have a new extension now. So mine's a .party instead of a .com. So it's tipsygypsy.party. I'm like, well, that fits better anyway. So there you have
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Huh.
It all worked out.
The name is pretty self-explanatory, but why don't you detail it a little bit? What do you do for people? Let's say I'm getting married. What happens? What do you...
So the process is... you would find me through one of the venues that I'm a preferred bartender at.
What are some of them?
Yeah, Northwest Maritime Center, Port Gamble Wedding Pavilion. Raincoast Farms likes to use me as one of their preferred vendors. So there's preferred vendors. I have about 7 or 8 of them that use me. And so they usually find out about me through the venue that they're renting for their party.
Okay.
Or they just are Googling and they find me through Google. Those are the two ways they find me the most. And then we just do a consultation. I get all the information. I have an intake form I've developed that I ask them all the questions. We detail all the things. And then I send them a quote. They can decide yay or nay if they want to use me. And if they use me, they secure the date in my calendar with a small deposit. And away we go from there. And then we continue to have conversations. Usually they're booking me 9 months to a year in advance is the average. So I usually won't talk to them for quite a while. But right. They do have a plan set forth. I'm like, about 60 days prior to your event, we're going to start having some conversations about your menu, the planning. I even help them. I bring everything with me. I can even shop for the alcohol for them. They have to pay for it, of course, but then I can go pick it up and bring it with me. They basically don't have to lift a finger. They can call me, say, I want a bar, such and such date, and boom, they don't ever have to lift another finger and do another thing. I do everything else from there.
What about like food?
Food, I do not do. I do alcohol. So I refer different caterers. Now, I am a caterer. I do have a food permit and a license to do food. And I do have a menu that I can give people. But they're usually all the events I do, they're picking out different caterers. They might not want my menu. They want a different menu. And that's fine. They don't have to hire me for my food. They can just hire me for the alcohol, which is what I focus on anyways, is just doing the bar.
Okay. And so how do you get all your stuff to the site?
I have big truck.
That makes
sense. And
it's
amazing. I have a PT Cruiser that has no back seats and it fits a lot too. Amazing how much stuff I can fit in that little car. Yeah. I'll show up at a venue and some venue managers will say, you got all that and that. I sure did. No, and I have a truck too. So if I have to haul glassware and stuff like that, we'll sometimes have to have two vehicles go.
Okay. Speaking of glassware, when we talked the other day, you were talking about environmental issues.
Yeah. So Tipsy Gypsy is laid out as a special purpose corporation. And what a special purpose corporation is in the state of Washington, you get special tax benefits for picking a social purpose. And that can be anything from like something that you want to support, like domestic violence or something like that. I choose the environment. So the environment is my social purpose, which means you can put purpose over profits. And so we strive for zero waste events. So we don't use any plastic straws. We use all paper, all bamboo picks. We try to encourage people not to use plastic cups, to rent the glassware. And unfortunately, sometimes I still do have to do plastic cups because ultimately the customer is the boss. But so we try to do the eco cups, you know, the compostable ones, and try to get them composted correctly and all that kind of stuff. It's still a big issue. I'm still trying to figure out how to wrap into a goal of mine for the future would be to wrap into the price all the glassware so they just don't have a choice. It's just they're getting glassware no matter what. And we're just going to do glasses all the time.
So you've been running the company now for close to 5 years, I guess?
Yeah, since 2018.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. So what are one or two...
Just finished our 6th year, yeah.
One or two memorable events where the party was, different a bit?
Well, all of them are pretty memorable. One of the most memorable times that gives me a tear in my eye is I had a bride whose father had passed away, and 12 of his best friends were there. They all had gone from grade school all the way through college together. I guess her father died at a pretty young age. He was like 60 or something like that. And when it came to the father-daughter dance, I'm going to try to say this without getting a lump in my throat. They all took turns dancing with her, and they each kept cutting in and cutting in and cutting in. And I was just crying like a baby. And I can't tell you how many toasts I've cried through. I'm like, I don't even know these people. And I'm bawling at the toasts. But that definitely was one of the biggest tear jerkers. You know, and then I haven't had a lot of fiascos happen at my events. I need some wood to knock on. Yeah. So I've been pretty lucky, but there has been a couple of occasions where, you know, it's a live event.
Yeah.
So things can go wrong.
True.
And there's no backtracking, editing, or anything like that. It's live, right?
Yeah.
So we were at the Mary Gates Hall at the University of Washington and doing an engagement party. For a Pakistani couple, and they had all the royalty, you know, how they dress with all the jewels and the sequins and the pretty, it's more fancy than any wedding. And it was just an engagement party, but it was 300 people.
Wow.
So I had 3 bartenders there. They had a Indian restaurant come in and serve all this food. They did not hire any servers or any bussers.
Huh.
And so I didn't want the couple to suffer. So we went down to one bartender, and the other two bartenders started bussing tables for 300 people in this hall that had no kitchen, no running water, no one to change trash sacks or anything. And we just made it happen.
Wow.
We were running around like chickens with our heads cut off, cursing behind the scenes. Didn't let the customers see that though. Sweating a little bit, but we made it happen and we pulled it off. And it was, I mean, I just had an incredible team.
Huh. And is it hard for you to find people to work with you?
Not really. I mean, you pay people well and they come work for you. So
that's good, because I hear a lot of people saying how tough it is to keep staff and everything.
We pay our people well. So
yours is a year-round business, but it must be busier in certain months than others.
Oh, definitely busier in the spring and summer, and then the shoulder season, fall. Actually, here, summer and fall is the busier. Spring is kind of a shoulder season, then winter really dies off.
Yeah. I can understand. Well, there must be a few Christmas kind of things, or New Year's.
A couple Christmas parties, New Year's parties, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not completely dead, but...
Yeah. Come January and February, though, it is.
Yeah. Okay. And so, looking ahead a little bit, what are your plans for the business?
Well, I am having a bar cart trailer built right now. It's being custom built. It's brand new, being custom built down by a Circle 8 Trailers down in Mitchell, Oregon. And I'm very excited to see that project come to fruition. So as soon as he's done with that, you'll see it wheeling around here in Port Townsend, the Tipsy Gypsy trailer. It's going to be super cute. So it's going to be shaped like a rounded horse trailer. And it's going to have, it's going to be cream white with some walnut wood on the outside and have some copper backsplashing on the inside. It's going to be super, super cute. I'm so excited for it.
Yeah. Sounds cute. What capacity does that give you that you don't have now?
Just gives me another bar to rent for people who want more of their Pinteresty type weddings pictures, you know. I can do maybe, I just recently got my liquor license last year, so I can do more festivals and events like that now, and that will allow me the capacity to be able to do that.
Okay. Now, we're almost out of time. One quick final question. You must have a little bit of time to yourself. What do you do? Do you skydive? Or
I have skydived before.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. Yeah, it was great. Three times in one day. But that's the only time I did it. It was a long time ago. But I sail. So I love sailing. And I used to be on the Rat Island rowing team. So I like rowing. I got my own shell finally. So I row and I sail. Okay. Anything on the water.
That sounds great. You're in the right spot.
That's right.
Okay. Well, Heidi, I want to thank you very much for being a guest on the show. I'm sure our listeners are really curious to hear about the Tipsy Gypsy, if they haven't already. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today, Heidi Haney, owner of the Tipsy Gypsy, a mobile bar service. She does everything from weddings to graduations, Sweet 16, everything. Retirement parties. So thank you very much. In addition to thanking Heidi, I also want to thank Taylor Clark, editor and producer of Our Town. Many of you don't realize how important the role of an editor is on a show like this. He can edit out any mumbles, errors, you knows, bloopers, sneezes, anything like that. Makes us sound so much more eloquent and smooth. So thank you, Taylor. I want to also thank you, the listener. Loyal fans of KPTZ, it's been an amazing decade plus for this hardy little community radio station. Please keep listening to KPTZ. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. I'm signing off for today, but please stay tuned to KPTC for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Taylor Clark.